Well, good day. My name is Joel. My mission is to help you get a funeral end-of-life pre-plan in place, documented, signed, and filed with your local funeral home provider and with your family. You say, why do you even care? Well, there's a couple reasons I care. First of all, I'm very selfish. And as a funeral director for many years, it is so much easier on me when I can pull out a file that is written in your hand and been crafted with the assistance of a funeral director or a pre-need counselor. It's so much easier on my life when I already know what you want and sometimes what the family wants, and I can put things together and take a burden off of the family. I'll never forget sitting at the desk. A lady sat down and she explained, and I went over what was in the file, and she said, how much is this going to cost? And I said, about $13,000. And she kind of started to turn a little bit green, as anybody would. And I says, wait a second. Years ago, your mama pre-planned and pre-paid for this, and so there'll be nothing for you to spend. Oh, you should have seen the storm clouds part and the sun come out when she realized that someone had the forethought and the care to financially care for things. I remember another case. I had two brothers in my office, and they were just about to roll up their sleeves and go out. Matter of fact, I was calling the sheriff to come break the fight up because I didn't want to, you know, break a nail or anything. And the reason they were fighting is because Mama had not made clear what her final wishes were, and each brother had his own idea of how it needed to be. So it makes my life so much more pleasant when there is a plan in place. I remember years ago, I was sitting in my office and a lady came in to make arrangements for her brother, never married, never had any children, and he had suddenly passed away. I think he was in his 40s. And so she sat down and she says, well, I think he would want this and this and this and this. And we started going over it. And then, of course, I had to get the adding machine out, and this is what it's going to cost. And literally, she just got up and walked out of the office in total distress. Why? There was no plan. There was no funding. Guess who became the bad guy? Me. And it was at that case many years ago when I adopted the phrase, don't blame yourself because your loved one failed to leave a plan and to leave funding. That way I was being selfish. I kind of took the highlights off of myself, the spotlight off of myself, and put it back on the person who had passed away. So I'm kind of selfish that way. The other reason I would love to see you have something in place, even if it's very simple, is for the sake of your family and your friends. And again, I have sat at the arrangements table hundreds of times, and I have sat down there. It's been children, teenagers, adults, grandma, grandpa. I have managed the end-of-life arrangements for people within every decade of life. And I see the relief and how easy it is when the arrangements are already made. So during that, I have also sat with hundreds of people helping them make pre-arrangements. And in that context of making pre-arrangements, I have heard them say things that I consider to be, you know, the title of my podcast is Silly Things People Say When Pre-Planning. But I will modify that, I'll buffer that a little bit by saying things that are not helpful that people say or think when they are doing a plan for end of life. I don't want to seem... The first thing that comes up in every discussion, and I always ask, and I don't know why, because I always know what the response is going to be, but I ask them, what kind of viewing would you prefer? And one of the silly things that people say is, I don't want to be seen, which is fine. I understand people having that sentiment. But then they say, they should have come to see me when I was alive. What an idiot thing to say. First of all, they didn't come to see you when you were alive because maybe they didn't feel the freedom to come see you when you were alive. And coming to see you when you can no longer hurt or lash out at them or be a problem to them, maybe they need to come and spend some time with your lifeless body so they can make peace with you. You say, how can they make peace with me when I have passed away? You would be surprised. I have been in the viewing room, again, hundreds of times, as husbands and wives and sons and daughters and grandchildren and friends come in. The conversation they give to one another, the support they give to one another, they need to make peace. Listen, don't be a stinker, and don't say silly things like, well, they should have come to see me when I was alive. If you, let me say it this way, if you wanted someone to come see you when you were alive, get on the phone and say, come see me, I want to visit with you. I know. You wanted it to be their idea, bless your pea-picking little heart. Number two, give them the opportunity to see you if they wish. I would never force anybody into the viewing room, but one of the things I always counsel people is this. Let them make the decision when you have passed away. Your funeral director is going to do a good job of preparing things to make it the best situation possible in one of the worst situations that they will go through. Your funeral is not a final gotcha. I'm sure I've shared on this podcast before. I repeat myself often. You'll hear things over and over again. I was sitting with a lady and or a man, could have been a man. I don't want to give anything away here. But she said, when I die, I want you to come pick me up at night. She said, I want you to cremate me and I want you to put my ashes in the garbage and do not tell anybody that I have passed away. I don't know what the dynamic was in her family. It was obviously rather sad and tenuous, but she was using her death or her imminent death or whatever she was going to die as a final gotcha. Don't do that. Don't do that. Leave it up to them. Give it an opportunity. So that is about viewing, and again, seeing, quote unquote, the body. To some people, it's incredibly important. To others, they don't care. But give them the opportunity. For me, I helped conduct my dad's funeral. My favorite part of both my mom and my dad's funeral was not the funeral service. It was the time with them in their casket after they had passed away. Just, you know, my grandmother lived at 7643 South Park in Tacoma, Washington. We had birthday meals there. We had Thanksgiving and Christmas and the Christmas tree and the family celebrations. And when I was a lad growing up, I spent many, many nights at my grandmother's house. I can still hear the clock on the mantle. It was an old wind-up clock. And I can still hear the tick, tick, tick. I can still hear my grandmother's heavy foot on the stairs as she carries down a bedroll and makes a place for me to sleep on the floor in the living room of the house there. And whenever I'm in Tacoma, I love to go to 7643 South Park. I don't knock on the door because we don't own it anymore and don't know who lives there. But when I drive by that house, I am flooded with memories of my childhood. The cherry tree, the smell of fresh cut grass, my grandfather in his Mackinaw and his hat and his pipe in his mouth with the shovel spading up the garden. It's much the same when I stood by the lifeless body of my father and saw the hands that held me and did other things sometimes when I was bad. And it was just a very special and a very wonderful time. You know, I think part of that is I have great peace about my eternity. And having a great peace about my eternity removes a lot of the dread of death. So leave it up to people to have the viewing. Don't say those silly things. Oh, they should have come see me when I was alive. Come on. We're here to be helpful to our family, our friends, and our loved ones, not to make things more difficult for them at a time that is already difficult. The next thing that people say, it's not helpful and it's silly and so on and so forth. And I understand the sentiment. It's from a false sense of humility, but people say, oh, it doesn't matter. Throw me in the ditch, throw me in the backyard, just cremate me and throw me in the river. Yes, your life does matter. And as much as your life matters, so does your death. So does your passing. You are an individual. You are a created being. You are unique. In the history of the world, there's never been another exactly like you. You have a specific set of family, a specific set of friends, a specific set of co-workers and people in your community. Of course it matters what happens when you pass away. Now, I'm not saying you have to have a state funeral with the governor or the president. I'm not saying that it has to be some fancy thing. I'm saying that your life is important, and whatever arrangements are made need to be made twofold. Number one, they need to be made on purpose. Number two, they need to be made with the understanding that, yes, your life matters. And by the way, I can add into this, number three, arrangements need to be made based upon the fact that your family, your friends, and your loved ones, they also matter. And this is your final chance to make a positive contribution to their lives. Don't let your own discomfort with the idea of dying inform your decisions. Engage in the process, please, because it does matter. Let me just this week, I was up at the cemetery. Matter of fact, well, I got a phone call, actually a text last night, and I'm on the West Coast. I'm in Oregon, and I had some people send me a text. Say, we're from Hawaii. We're in the cemetery, and we're looking for our family members. Could you help us, please? And of course, I was very happy to go up to the cemetery, and there they were doing that. I've seen it so many times. They're going back and forth and back and forth trying to find out where somebody's buried. And they told me who they were looking for, and I took them over and showed them the grave spaces. And a dad, elderly dad, looked at where his father was buried, and I could see the love and the respect and the admiration and the emotion on his face as he saw the final resting place of his father. And then I saw a grandson look at his grandfather's grave. And then I saw two itty-bitty boys, probably all 5, 6, 7, or 8, walking around, not really understanding what they were seeing, but they just brought the boys up there and says, this is where your great-grandpa is buried. It was a connection. It was a connection. Please, I understand it's your death. I understand you're uncomfortable talking about it and planning for it, but understand that these, I believe the gentleman who had passed away in 1960. This is 2023 as I record this, so that was, what, 63 years ago he passed away. 63 years later, he's been in the ground. 63 years later, two little bitty boys come. That's my great-grandpa. Yes, yes, it matters. It matters. It matters so much. Also, this week I had another lady come to the cemetery. She says, I just want to visit my grandmother's grave. Could you tell me where she is, please? Silly things that people say. Oh, it doesn't matter. Oh, it matters so much more than you think, in so many more ways than you think. The next thing that people say, that I understand the sentiment behind it, but if you understand the dynamic, it's kind of a silly thing to ask. And that is, they say, well, before I make arrangements, I need to ask the kids. I understand that, but let me tell you how the kids are going to respond. See, now, again, you've been through this, unless you're a funeral director, a clergy, or someone who's been around the death industry a lot, you don't have the information that I have. And so let me give you some information. The first thing they're going to say, well, mom, dad, it's your decision. You do what you want. That's up to you. That's what they're going to say. And by the way, that what they say is based on an intellectual decision. In other words, they're dealing with the facts. Mom and dad are alive right now. They're going to die someday. Well, it's up to you. It's your decision. That's the first thing that they usually tell people. After we've sat at the arrangements table, we've made all these arrangements, they say, well, we want to talk to the kids. They go talk to the kids, and they come back, and they said, well, it's our decision. The second thing the kids say is, well, we don't care. Now, I know that's kind of the same as your decision, but they take a more detached view of, well, you know, we don't care. It's, as they say, it's your funeral. And so that's what they say, secondly. And then the third thing that happens is one of the children will probably hijack the whole operation and say, well, here's what we want. And the person who is pending, shall we say, the person for whom the arrangement is being made, they get completely washed overboard out of the decision-making process. See, look at this. Here you are. You're sitting with me at the table. I've got my pencil and paper out. We're recording what your wishes are. And you say, well, I think I'd really like to have this. I think I'd like to have this cemetery. I think I really like to do this. As a matter of fact, this happened, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. I met with a man and his wife, and he says, we want to do this, 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 and this. And they were very certain about what they wanted to do. And he said, I'll get back to you after I talk to my son. I said, okay. I didn't hear from him for a couple of weeks, so I got on the phone and I called him and I says, what'd you decide? What's going on? He says, oh, we're not going to do any of that. We're just going to do this. Did not reflect what he and his wife really wanted. And so, by asking the son, what do you want, they were put in this position. Do we proceed with what we actually want to have happen? Or do we turn the whole thing over to our son, daughter, so on and so forth? Now, I understand not your family dynamic. You understand that. You understand that. And by the way, everything I say needs to be taken in the context of your family dynamic. Every family is a little bit different. But understand that when you ask son or daughter what they may just go over the top of everything that you wanted, and you won't get any of it. And finally, let me say about asking the kids, you know what's missing? The emotion of loss. You see, when I sit at a table and talk with someone about my death, it is an intellectual discussion. Well, do you prefer burial or cremation? Do you want to use a cemetery or do you not want to use a cemetery? Do you want to have a service? Do you not want to have a service? Oh, I don't think that's all that important. That's not that big. We'll let the kids figure it out. Blah, 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 blah. It is an intellectual decision based upon what we presume the facts to be. But after death happens, it is now an emotional experience, and the emotions have to be, no, I don't have to be, the emotions should be addressed to be the most helpful to our loved ones who are left behind. By the way, if you hear a chicken crowing in the background, that's just Marty. I apologize, but when I start talking in here, he starts crowing sometimes, so if you hear the little bugger, that is what you're hearing. But anyway, when you ask their opinion on that, the missing part is the emotional part. That's why a funeral director or someone as myself as a funeral director is far better to have this discussion with, because we've seen firsthand what is helpful and what is not helpful in the end of life process. The next thing that people say that's kind of silly and not helpful is, well, I'll just let the kids handle it. So basically what you're saying is, when I die, I'm going to place on my kids a financial burden, an emotional burden, and an intellectual burden, as well as the business burden of dealing with end of life, because you probably don't have a will or final things set up either. You can do a lot of the legwork and have so many things already set up and already done before your final day, and it's so much easier on the kids for you to have that handled. It's just so easy to dismiss it and say, let the kids handle it. I like to put that in context. I don't know what today is when you're listening to this. It may be a year from now. Probably not last year. But let's just say, I want you to imagine in your mind, you know, in the heart, they have that descending artery, I think it is. It's called the widowmaker. And the first symptom of a heart attack is usually death. Bang, you're dead. What are your kids doing right now? I had a little lady pass away, I think it was about 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago. The kids were in another country. They were on vacation. And it took them almost 3 or 4 days to get home before we could even start making arrangements. So what are your kids doing today? And let's just interrupt their day by giving them a phone call and saying, your mom, your dad, the person that you care about just passed away. You need to come now and start making arrangements. And by the way, there's a financial burden that's going to be there as well. And by the way, they didn't have a will, so you have all this business to take care of. You have changed their lives for the next year and done nothing to prepare them for that moment. Or you've done some, which is good, but maybe not enough. So silly to just say, just let the kids handle it. You're putting a year-long burden on them if you don't take care of it yourself. Now again, your children love you, your loved ones, they love you, and they'll handle everything, but they'll probably be cussing you under their breath over the next year. The next thing that I want to say is this. It's not about you. Hundreds of times, I've seen it. I've gone to funeral services hundreds of times, and I always stand in the back and always listen. And you know what? It's a reunion time. People haven't seen each other for years. People are getting to, you know, again, using your death as a reason to get together. At that point, it really, I'm in my mind's eye, I'm at the church. And in the main sanctuary, there is a casket, and the decedent, the loved one, is in there. And in the other part of the church, there's a fellowship hall, there's a meeting room, and the tables are laden with food, the little roll-ups from Costco, the fried chicken, the veggie tray. And you know what's going on in that room right now? While your lifeless body's in there, people are laughing and talking and sharing, and most of their laughing and talking and sharing is not about you. It's about reconnecting and making new connections with people. That happens because you made your life, which was an important life, even more important when you passed away. You said, it's no longer about me. And truly, the emotional part is still about you. The missing is still there. The empty place is still there. But every decision going forward, it's no longer about you. They're having to reinvent their life, reimagine their life without you being part of it. So no, it's no longer about you. So death is that transition that you can make so much easier on your loved ones just by making a plan, signing it, filing it with your local funeral service provider. I'll help with that. You can email me. If you email me, I'll give you my phone call. We'll talk, or we can do a what do you call that thing where you talk on the computer, a FaceTime or a Zoom call or something like that. I'd be happy to discuss your particular situation with you and even send you some paperwork to get things started. You know, I heard someone say that a will is your final love letter to your family, and I will expand that and say having your life in order when you pass away is your final love letter, final act of love for your family. Please don't be dismissive. Please don't just cast things aside as if your life doesn't matter. It certainly does. You've lived a life. You've probably lived it well. You've probably done a good job at life. Your life deserves to be honored and recognized. As I've said in one of my other podcasts, it is where children, young people who are still in their formative years, learn that we value people and we value their lives. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Joel. Connect@assistedplanning.com is my email address. Connect@assistedplanning.com is my email address. I would love to hear from you. I'd love to get some feedback. I'd love to hear what arrangements you have in place. Or would you do this? Would you just send me an email and say, Joel, we have made all of our arrangements. And by the way, if you'd like, I'll even review them with you to see if you missed a few parts. Sometimes people say, oh, we've got our arrangements all made, only to find that there's some major pieces that have been left out. You have a wonderful day every day until your final day.